Welcome to another episode of Comedy Wham! Presents with me, your host Valerie, and my sometime kitty co-hosts Miss Purrington and Mookie are back at home. We are recording from the beautiful Driscoll Hotel in downtown Austin. ComedyWham.com is your place to go for features about all Austin comedy. In addition to podcasts, Comedy Wham! Brings you articles, album reviews, our advice column, my Austin Chronicle articles about the Austin comedy scene, our festivals page, and more. We're best known for our events page for the live comedy shows in Austin, Houston, and DFW, where 100% of the entries you see come from comics and producers. If you want your show featured in the calendar, click the Submit a Show button from the top of the homepage or events page to complete the short survey. It's free and easy. Tag us on your Instagram stories and we'll share your show promo to our Instagram followers. Want to support these resources we provide? You can donate to Comedy Wham! On PayPal, Venmo, or even Patreon. Click the Support CW icon on our homepage to see the ways that you can help us. And we also offer promo boosts of your shows. Now back to our podcast. Launched in 2016, the podcast project brings you funny people and their stories. As a fan, I like to delve into a comic's background and motivations, and we usually take a detour along the way. Consider the interview a way for you to get to know why the Austin comedy scene is as fascinating offstage as it is on stage. If you like this podcast, please rate and review us. Today, I am talking to the deputy entertainment editor of the LA Times. He's been a legal writer, a music editor, and so you can kind of say that writing courses through his veins. He's been coming to Austin the last couple of years to report on the growing comedy scene, and now I'm so excited to Comedy Wham! Presents our guest, Nate Jackson.
Hi, good to be here.
Hi, thank you, welcome.
Yeah.
All right, and that does it for my notes.
Awesome.
So I'm gonna treat you the same as I do my comics. I always start with an icebreaker question.
Okay.
So I'm gonna hit you up with my icebreaker.
Sure.
One word to describe your past.
Blurry.
Blurry. All right. Any insights as to why?
Well, I mean, thinking about Austin, like I came down here for years and years as a musician. And doing South By, doing official and unofficial shows, and that we would drive down from California every year, and that was like just every year was an adventure type of thing, and it was fun and crazy, and we never made any money, but we had a lot of fun. And then, you know, I also came as a journalist, like also in music, though, covering stuff like a lot of the big shows and everything. For at the time, I was working at OC Weekly, which is an alternative weekly based in Orange County, and then I did it for the LA Times too. My first tour as a journalist there, so that was its own thing, you know, like a lot of industry stuff, different crowd, different. I mean, even though it's still music, it's just a lot different than from being on Sixth Street playing shows like five shows a night or whatever. But, and then you see, like, all these, you know, the Jay-Z concert and stuff, and covering that type of stuff. And then now, like, this last couple of years, I've been coming as more or less a comedy reporter.
Yeah.
When I started doing that, you start to see the town from a whole other perspective that, like, I never really paid attention to before.
Yeah.
So it is kind of just, like, all, like, I don't know. I just try to get some good barbecue while I'm here and meet some cool people.
That's a smart move.
You know, so... Yeah.
What was your instrument of choice as a musician?
So I was a bassist and a vocalist.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, you've got that deep gravelly voice.
Yeah.
All right. So I have no idea. So I usually do really good research, but I didn't do your musical research.
Ah, that's okay. You'd be forgiven.
Death metal, heavy metal.
No.
Pure rock.
No. You know, it was kind of it was rock, but it was kind of eclectic. Like, okay. I think it had some soul in there and some, like, funk and stuff. And then we just had, like, a lot of, like, effects and things we did. It was an interesting group.
Yeah.
I just did, I don't know. We got a lot of good feedback here.
Yeah.
Because people just like everything here. Like,
yeah.
I feel like, you know, it's a very... You come down, you meet people, and then those people, if they like you, they'll bring their friends. And then those friends will come and follow you at the shows. And, like, that's...
Yeah.
You're not used to that in LA. Like, it's very hard to get people to come out to shows sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, oh, who, like, where is it at? What part of LA? What part of, like, who's playing? All that. I'm like,
yeah.
So here, I feel like it was just, the spirit is still a little bit more like, hey, let's go check out something we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Which I think is the spirit of, like, what attracts me to comedy now. I feel like there's, like, that similar energy that I used to feel around music. Mm-hmm. I sort of feel it in the stand-up scene.
Yeah, this I've heard the Austin comedy scene audiences, especially of late, like, they get comedy, and they, you know, they understand the variety of comedy that they can watch, and they, you know, they'll pick and choose accordingly because there's so many choices here. And yeah, there's some people that are like, get really rabid cult followings, you know, that start here, here in Austin, and it's such a difference where, you know, before COVID, you had maybe one or two, like, big breakout comics, and you'd follow them around, and you know, it's, now it's like, okay, another person blowing up. Okay, another person.
So much happening. Yeah, everyone's coming here.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was one of the interesting things to hear about when I did a story on the scene a year ago, like, I was mentioning it, and hearing about what was, because again, like, I hadn't been paying attention, like, a lot of people maybe before the last few years. Like, I knew that it was a place where entertainers go, and I mean, obviously comics are entertainers, but in terms of the inner workings of it, it was kind of interesting to hear about, like, how it was before and, like, what it is now. So, but it sounds like, I mean, there's still a lot of people, like, a lot of some of the venues, even though maybe they've shifted around a little bit, a lot of them are still here, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's definitely not the same model of people needing to leave.
Yeah.
As critically as it was before COVID. And one of my darling favorites is Vanessa Gonzalez. She, before COVID, she moved to LA, and she's a very homegrown Texas girl, you know, from South Texas, moved to Austin, started blowing up in Austin, and made the decision to move to LA, and then she moved back to Austin during the pandemic, and because of the work that she was able to pick up, and because Austin just became an easy place to have performances at her level, she doesn't have to move. I'm sure that the one missing component to Austin is having ample studio stages, or, you know, recording stages for TV, film. Because I would imagine somebody like her, and there's so many others, that's the missing piece that I don't think we have yet.
Yeah, the infrastructure of going from the stage to the screen is what a lot of comics are trying to do. There's some that have no interest in that, but I think even if you don't, if you're not trying to be on a show or get a commercial or whatever, there are aspects of, like, you know, having agents down here watching you if you're going to get booked on tours or to open for somebody. Having those people in the crowd, like, makes a difference. So, you know, and you don't always know, but, I mean, it is still a thing where, I think some of the more, like, the bigger touring agencies, like the CAAs and the UTAs and stuff, like, they, I don't know how often or where, what shows they come. It's hard to, like, get a beat on that, but that part can definitely make or break a comic's career.
Well, you mentioned industry.
And
the big, big news over the last month is JFL. And I know that industry all flocked to Montreal. Because that's where they would see people. You know, they'd get to see their clients. And what, I mean, I can't even imagine the shakeup that that's causing.
I mean, it was kind of caught me by surprise because I was, you know, under the impression that, that was, like, the thing that was just going to be there. But as we've seen, it's just, like, the ripple effect of the pandemic, like, really did affect these institutions that we've built for different areas of entertainment, for sure. And I don't think that like, even things like the writer's strike in Hollywood and stuff, like, has these ripple effects of, like, you know, people not being able to develop stuff in time to get it picked up, and then if it doesn't get picked up, or then it just kind of dies on the vine.
Yeah.
Or if you've got some sort of, like, you know, there's people that are in charge of programming for certain things, and, like, if they're on strike and they're not producing, then that leaves a huge gap. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's just less money coming in because there's less product coming out. And I think all of that has a ripple effect. With JFL, I think they filed for Chapter 11, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that could have been also sort of a result of, like, I don't know, maybe they weren't selling as many passes or something.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But
and I think they offered free programming too, and maybe that
kind of backfired.
Yeah.
So, and then I don't know what effect that has on, like, Moon Tower and stuff. That's a huge thing here.
Yeah, I'm working on a piece to promote Moon Tower for the Austin Chronicle.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I read about the JFL shutting down is it wasn't going to affect the franchises.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I read. So somebody had asked, well, what's the impact on JFL Toronto?
Mm-hmm.
And I read, you know, nothing, because it was more of a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, oh, okay, well, Moon Tower is not going to be affected, because they just, last year, I think it was the second year of the partnership.
Yeah.
And I went to the Moon Tower website, and I'm like, interesting, all the JFL branding is gone.
Mm.
It's wiped clean.
Yeah.
And I wrote the director, and, you know, very, very politically correct. You know, we enjoyed our time partnering with JFL, but, you know, Moon Tower is in its 15th year. We're excited about everybody we're bringing. You know, that quick pivot.
Everybody's excited. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Moon Tower is such a unique creature, and I don't know how often you've gotten to attend, but I think I'm probably going on my fifth, sixth year of attending. It's a magical experience.
Mm-hmm.
Admittedly, I've never gone to JFL, so I don't really have a true comparison to know, is Moon Tower so unique? But I am 100% biased that I love Moon Tower. I love the people that run Moon Tower.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it worked out for a couple of years, but they know what they have been doing for the last, 15 years.
Right.
That they were running on their own without the big brand, they'll run without again.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, everything kind of has to change every so often, you know, so we'll see what happens with it.
So you're interested in the Austin comedy scene. I'm interested in what's been happening in LA.
Sure.
Since, you know, the big vacuum. No, I'm sure it was not really that big of a vacuum, because I know the LA comedy scene is immense.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not all revolved around the store, but what has the impact been to big names like Rogan and Hinchcliffe moving out of, you know, their home base of the store?
You know, I don't know that to the average, like, comedy fan it really has impacted so much, because they're like, their fan bases are so, like, locked into them. I think the general comedy fan just wants to go see a show.
Yeah.
And those haven't stopped.
Yeah.
I think the crossover between Austin and LA is still so heavy, because you have just all these comics. I mean, I come down here and it's like being in LA. Like, last year I bumped into, like, comics left and right that I'm like, oh, hey, what's going on? Like, did not plan it. I was like, I didn't think I was going to see anybody, because it was the week after South By and the week before Moon Tower. I distinctively kind of went to just talk to a lot of the venue people when they weren't going to be, like, underwater with all the chaos, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then I still wound up running into a lot of people. But because, like, you know, it's a great place to fly in to get the stage time. And that's really what it's all about. I mean, the LA thing, it's still kind of tough to get the stage time. But I think what a lot of people, the trap some people who are trying to be comedians might fall into, is like, oh, I have to get in at the store. I have to get at the Laugh Factory. I have to get in at improv. It's like, no, like, there's a huge landscape. And there's stages all over the place, all over LA. You know, one of the things that we did Probably just before we did the, I think the same year as I did the Austin story, we did a package on like all the different, like the 60 best spots to do comedy in LA.
60?
Yeah.
Good Lord.
And I actually trimmed it down. And notice I said spots, I didn't say clubs. Because there are a lot of places outside the club circuit that you can get stage time in that you'll get paid. In ways that, you know, in like if you go to a hotel, like certain hotels have like comedy shows and programs and stuff. They have a budget to do that type of stuff. One of those production teams that I have worked with and written about before is Can't Even Comedy, and they do the hotel circuit a lot. And it's a lot of times more beneficial for the comics who are like used to doing the circuit, but like want to test their stuff out in front of like a new audience or a more general audience that's like just coming to this, like, you know, because in LA that's the tough part is you get the industry crowds and the LA crowd, which is like a bunch of entertainers. You're entertaining entertainers and they don't want to hear it most of the time, or they're like just being very skeptical of everything. It's just like I remember it being a musician, because performing, and it's like, you know, you have a bunch of people in the crowd who are like in the bands, and they're like that they're following you or have gone up before you, and it's just, it's not the same as just being in front of a bunch of fans, which when we go in other parts of the country it was so much better, because it was just like you get like a real actual feedback reaction of what you're doing up there. And so with the LA stuff, what I would tell people is look for those pop-up nights at like the hotels, the bars, other areas like freaking Natural History Museum will have like a comedy night somewhere.
My gosh.
You know, like it's just one of those things where you can get in front of crowds that like don't normally see shows like that, or they're not comics themselves, and that's a good indicator of how your stuff's going to do around the country, you know. Or go to like, you know, the other thing is, so we opened it up to like areas outside of LA proper. So like in Southern California, you know, obviously everyone's like, oh, LA. But you got the South Bay, you have Long Beach, you have Orange County, you have the Valley, you know, all these different areas where it's like just outside of the saturation point that feel a lot more like what you would experience going to other places.
Yeah.
And you can, if you can make those people laugh and bring those people and get those people excited, then it's like, okay, like I think I could probably do a decent job at touring, you know?
Yeah. In the age of going viral on TikTok, is touring still a thing for the rising comic?
I think so. Yeah, I definitely think so. Because the thing is, you see those comics who only exist on social media, and that's great for them building that audience, but I don't think that that's gonna really equate to, I mean, it may almost be on its way out in terms of like something else is gonna be shifting and taking its place.
Yeah.
So like if you're a comic that's putting all your eggs in the TikTok basket, TikTok's in court right now, you know what I mean? Like, and you can't even put music to your videos anymore. You know, if you wanted to. A lot of the, I mean, not all across the board, but most of the big labels are pulling their catalogs from TikTok.
Wow.
So, you know, one of the things I'm working on with a reporter right now is like sort of the future of that as a, not just a revenue stream, but as like a career builder, like we're saying, you know, with respect to how artists view it as like a vehicle. And I think with comedy, it's like the same thing. Like, what if one of these platforms goes away? So you have to diversify across the board. That's just on the social aspect. Mm-hmm. So like if TikTok goes away, okay, well, okay, we have Reels, you know, we can still do Instagram. Okay, well, what if Instagram, you know, Meta, you know, those guys have been in front of the mic too, in front of, you know, in front of these, you know, these panels, these jury panels, judge panels. And so it's like, you have to kind of look at it like, okay, this is just an aspect of what I do as a comedian. It can't be the whole thing. Because a lot of comics who just do that stuff, they go on stage and they bomb. They bomb like hard because they're just like not used to dealing with a live crowd.
Yeah.
And you see it like the crowds that come to see them because they like their videos. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Like I saw them. The shtick didn't work.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It wasn't as funny. I don't think I'm going to come back, you know?
Right.
So if you're not developing on the stage angle, then you're not really being a comic.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I think. I mean, it's, you should do both. And there are some comics who are great on stage but have no social presence.
Yeah.
You know? And
they
like,
don't know how to promote themselves. That's don't know the how funniest to promote. Thing.
Yeah. And and just don't, but like aggressively don't want to do it. Yeah. And I'm like, well, if you want to get booked beyond just the same stuff you've been doing since like 10, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. then you have to play that game a little bit, you know? And then I think also from like, and I also equate this back to like, you know, meeting fans. FaceTime with fans is a huge thing. Selling merch is a huge thing. You can't do really a great job of either of those things if you're always behind a keyboard or your phone. Mm. It's a good supplement. It's a good sort of alternative.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're going to really make a mark as like a stand-up, you have to engage with your audience just like you would with crowd work, mm-hmm. but like off stage. Yeah. So that's where I do think touring and stuff is huge still. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that doesn't go away.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think it will.
Yeah. Well, with companies like Can't Even, and I can think of a handful of others, you know, that's kind of their brand is they help the up-and-coming comic with, you know, being able to go to different places to practice.
Right.
With different audiences.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, Max and Caitlin, they do a great job. And then, yeah, L.A., I mean, there's... Well, obviously, right now we're getting ready for Netflix as a Joke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and huge.
So that's coming back. Mm-hmm. That was... The first year I started back as a deputy was the year that deputy editor, that's when Netflix as a Joke came around. Mm. And I'd never heard of anything that big. I don't think there had been anything that big, like outside of JFL, you know, because it was like a 2-week thing. Every name you could imagine was on there. And all the clubs were involved. All of the big venues were involved mm-hmm. to some extent. It's even bigger now. I mean, if you look at that lineup, it's like so many shows of like the
Hollywood
Kia Forum.
Shows.
Yeah, Hollywood Bowl, the Greek, like. Yeah. Dodger Stadium.
My God.
You know what I mean? It's like, how big can this shit get? Like, you know, it's, it almost, and what I think what they're doing now is trying to tap into like these things that are like outside of just like the stand-up format where they break into like different areas of culture that like, you know, so whether it's music, whether it's like, you know, like film or live improv, sports. I mean, they have the roast of Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's just, it's a thing where I see where they're going with trying to make everything more of like, you have like a different tiers of experience that you can give people that want to get a ticket to this thing.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, it's a good thing to work comedy into all these different things. I think that you have to also be careful, I think, in sort of making it, because I see this in like in the awards arena, like the Oscars mm-hmm. and whatever, like comedy, even though it's a huge thing that everybody who doesn't like to laugh, right, I think it's still the mentality of it's a bit of an outsider's thing. You know, it's still a bit of, or not an outsider, like outsiders in the sense of like you have to kind of like accept like, hey, we're not, this isn't all going to be like PG. It's not going to be all be, it's going to be in most cases like very kind of like edgy or raunchy or whatever, like, and or unpopular opinions, you know? So like when you're catering to the mainstream, like with Joe Coy, right?
Yeah.
Like, or Kevin Hart or anyone who's come out and said, you know, award shows aren't like a space for comics anymore because mm-hmm. we can't say what we want to say and how we want to say it because there's like this general sort of like, you know, mentality of like what you can and can't say, what is and isn't acceptable.
Yeah.
So I think that it's sort of like riding that line, I guess. And then, I mean, it's all in the curation too. So you want to pick comics to do like the big, big stuff. They got to kind of like be able to be sort of like palatable to like a wide audience. Mm-hmm. And anything less than that, you kind of, or, you know, when you put some comics in that huge spotlight, but it's like, that's not really where they want to be or should be, or it's like too fast or whatever, like it can kind of like backfire, you know, like, I don't know. But at the end of the day, what I like about comedy is that the fans really are what keep them going too. Like, even if something happens with them, I mean, look, as long as it's not something that's like, you know, criminal, illegal, whatever, like if it's just for an opinion that they have, like, and their fans support them for it, it's like, all right, well, I can still be an entertainer, I can still do my thing, you know. So I think that probably hopefully gives people more confidence to keep pushing the envelope from in their stand-up, you know.
This entire scene was a buzz when they Netflix is a joke fest. Bookers came here and did their auditions. I haven't gone to the website lately, or I haven't, and I haven't seen any locals post, oh, I made it, you know. I'm gonna go. I would imagine we're getting pretty darn close.
Yeah,
that those announcements should start coming out to find out, you know, probably who are our locals are gonna be able to be. You know, they're not gonna be opening Hollywood Bowl, I would imagine, but you know.
No, but we kind of cruised past that, but I like that though. So there's the big shows, right?
Yeah.
But then all of the clubs get involved. And like, you know, the big four, the Store, Laugh Factory, Improv, the big three, whatever. But there's more, like, there's so many other clubs too that get involved too, and shows or whatever. So I think that I think it's cool because every level of comic can get in there in some way, you know.
And for that up-and-comer, having, you know, major festival on your credentials
is
a good way to bring people to your shows.
Right. Totally. So that's why it is a good thing that, you know, a big brand like that comes out and, like, kind of, like, puts a stamp on it. And then you can kind of, like, figure out where you fit in there, you know. Obviously auditioning and everything, but there's a lot of shows that pop up like week or two before that I'm like, oh, okay, like they're branding everything Netflix is a joke now, which is I mean, you can put it on your resume, you know, so that's good, you know.
It's like all the unofficial South by shows.
For
that
sure.
Happen.
Exactly.
There's a New York comic who was in Austin for a while, and he always says, you know, I'm on Moon, on South by, or I'm on Moon Tower. It's like, not on it at all.
Yeah, right.
He just happens to come to perform at the same
time. I was in the parking lot. I was there.
So do you cover only comedy and music, or do you cover a lot?
Yeah. So my role at the Times Now as deputy is help manage the section. So we have our managing editor who basically oversees everything, and then he's got like three deputies, including myself, that help run the teams: TV, film, music, arts, books. Like, we kind of split it up. I help with the music team, since that's my background. You know, music editor, I was that for a long time. And then and comedy is a beat that, like, is one of the beats that we've been developing on. And that's been really great to see that sort of blossom and see the coverage and, like, see the feedback for that coverage. And then I do a lot of special projects where it comes to, like, things that we're building out for, like, one-off, whether it's, like, you know, like the 101, LA 101 type of thing, or it's, like, just, like, a big, huge guide type of deal.
Yeah.
Or one of the things I really enjoyed working on is a project for Black LA called Behold, and that was started as a photo project, and basically, you know, black Angelenos from all different walks of life. We got them into we did portraits of people talking about their experience living in LA, their concerns about media, talking about, you know, how media plays a role in their life and all that. And that turned into something where we actually did a lot of like stories, like in these various issues, special issues, where just talked about different areas of black life in LA. So that's an area where, again, giving not only our readers but also like people within our staff a chance to like do projects centered around something that isn't part of like a normal like coverage area that's dedicated to a certain community, unless it's like negative, you know, or like unless it's something that's like, I don't know, something newsworthy that the whole country is jumping on or something like that. So so that's been cool. And then I also have been helping with our Sunday issues, which in entertainment, like, it could be anything from you know, actor profile to some like big survey of like, you know, Academy voters, talking about, you know, different changes happening with the HFPA or whatever. Like, we did that whole thing about the Golden Globes going down in flames, you know what I mean? So that type of stuff, I do help plan on quite a bit, now. Mm-hmm. And so, but I've been just trying to, again, what I really love to do and what I really love to see growth in is this comedy, stand-up comedy scene. So I try to like carve out, you know, whatever space we can to cover it, sustain coverage of it. And it's just gotten better and better, I think, as the years have gone on. And we've just gotten like more tips and more access and just more insight, really.
Yeah.
You know, and we're trying to share that, pass that along to our readers who, who are fans. I go to shows, I see them out there, you know what I mean? All these shows are packed, you know.
Yeah.
So it's great to see, especially coming out of the pandemic and everything.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
So as a writer and as an editor, working for one of the biggest newspaper names in the country, have you ever found yourself like absolutely starstruck at somebody that you got to cover?
Starstruck.
Or a memorable moment, maybe.
Yeah. I think, well, like, so one of the things that we did recently was we did a cover story on Usher, and that was a fun one because that's somebody who I grew up from my childhood. Like, I knew all of his songs, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And but also, like, just somebody from that era, people of that, like, the 90s, 2000s era, where it's like, I feel like that was sort of like peak celebrity time.
Yeah.
For my generation or whatever. And I was like, oh, okay, like, that was cool. And then, you know, but I always, you know, we hung out at his house and did a whole thing with him, like a photo shoot and everything. And like, the story was like right before the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was great. But yeah, I mean, ultimately at the end of the day, it's like you spend a lot of like downtime with these people, like between things.
Yeah.
And they're pretty, I mean, not all, but like the ones that I tend to remember are the ones that like are cool and nice and normal, you know. So it's like, you find, it's like with journalism, you just find ways to relate to people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, yeah, you wind up with a good experience.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, that was a fun one.
On, you know, finding ways to relate, that is always one of my, like, badges of honor, is if I'm told that I get this limited amount of time to talk to somebody, and they're like, you know, massive name, and I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe I'm getting to talk to this person for 15 minutes.
Right.
And at the 15 minute mark, out of politeness, I say, well, you know, we're at our 15 minutes of time, and they say, oh, I'm having a good time talking to you, let's go on.
Right.
And,
right,
you know, an hour later, you're like, okay, we should probably wrap up now.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff, like, just as the fan, as the journalist, it sticks with you.
Yeah, that's always great. You know, I'm trying to think, like, yeah, I mean, there's so many just, I mean, like, Bert Kreischer was, like, one of those people for me when I interviewed him, like, for his movie last year. Like, just a very nice guy, but, like, just someone you could hang around with, you know, and just, like, you kind of forget that it's an interview almost, you know? Yeah. And, like, I don't know. I mean, again, like, people that tend to be towards the top of the game, they're always, I mean, they usually tend to be, like, the easy, like, easygoing people like that. And I just, I don't know. I enjoy getting to know folks that see a different side of them that maybe I wouldn't necessarily assume would be, they'd be like that. I mean, I would, like, every, you go into every story, like, just try and have an open mind.
Yeah.
And if they, if the subject kind of, like, helps you with that, then that's great. You know what I mean? And sometimes it's not always that way, you know? But it's always on to the next story, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
So that's where you kind of, like, can't sit and analyze it too much.
True. Yeah.
So
Before we hit record, you mentioned you were working on a book. Is there anything that you can tell us about?
Sure.
This book?
Yeah. So I'm working on, I told you earlier, I'm from Orange County. I'm doing a book on, and I was a music editor for a long time, but my book I'm working on with a co-writer is the, it's about the history and evolution of Orange County punk music. It's called Tearing Down the Orange Curtain. That's our title. And it'll be out next year, next summer, on Hachette Books. And it kind of tells a story about, like, the beginnings of, like, the suburban punk rock scene in Southern California. In starting in, like, 1977, 78, around there, when a lot of the bands took shape. And then seeing how, you know, a lot of those early acts from, like, cities like Fullerton, Huntington Beach, Costa Mesa, like, really kind of helped along the evolution of punk rock as a format of music or as a scene, a culture that became global, you know, after, this is like third hand almost, after, you know, the UK, New York thing, and then travel down to the West Coast, and then LA, and then from LA, it's like Orange County's like right there. But it's like a world away in some aspects. So, but out of that scene, you have some of the biggest selling bands in the world, like Offspring, Social Distortion, No Doubt, Sublime. Names that, like, people all over the place know. And have connections all over the place, you know, and sold, like, millions of albums. So how did we get there? How did that happen? Who are the people that never really got recognized for helping make that happen? That's sort of what the book's about.
Cool.
Yeah.
My my boyfriend is in L.A.
Oh.
And I always make fun of him because he likes that Southern California punk rock sound.
Yeah.
And I tell him, oh, you're playing that yelly music again.
Yeah.
So I might have an automatic birthday Christmas present for him.
Yeah.
Get him your book.
Yeah. No, it's great. Like, I definitely love seeing shows where it's like bands that have been around for a long time, but, like, the music keeps hitting, like, a new generation. Like, so, like, you have, like, three generations of fans at a show.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that it's like the songs are still timeless. You know, the story behind the songs is sometimes even better than the song.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's just sort of like this enduring sort of, I said, culture that just doesn't go away. It doesn't matter whether it gets radio or whatever. You don't listen to the radio anymore hardly, you know. But, like, commercial attention, you know, it'll phase in and out, but the culture is what sustains it. Just like comedy, you know.
Yeah.
Like, comedy's been hot right now for a hot, like, 5 years or whatever. Like, people, like, have been, like, really paying attention more. And then, you know, before that, like, there was a time when the Comedy Store could barely keep its doors open, you know. Robin Williams had to do a benefit show so they could fix their roof.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And so stuff like that comes in and out, you know. But there's still a scene, there's still, you know, a thing that connects with fans that's going to be there. And so that's why we try to examine that. We examine that from, like, a musical lens of this book.
Yeah. I have a recent guest who said that the reason that comedy exists is because music fans are getting old and tired and they like to sit down and be entertained and not go deaf.
That's not wrong necessarily. I won't, you know, necessarily out some of my friends or me or anyone. But it, you know, but it's also just... Like, I just think the energy of it is more, just more fun, because I, like I said, the social media aspect kind of like sterilized a lot of the what's going on?
That's fine.
It's a tour.
Yeah.
You see how the hotel stuck out like a sore thumb and led eventually to its bankruptcy? Over here, we see the Texas Blue Pine, or the Blue Mountain.
I always laugh when it happens.
Now, you're coming to Texas during a lovely time of year. You're going to see some great wildflowers.
Music kind of, like, social media kind of, like, sterilized a lot of, like, the music culture in a way. Because there's, like, anyone can just, like I said, push a persona out there and, like, be an entity without having to collaborate so much. And, you know, they can put out all their info on their platforms and they think that that handles it, when like really it doesn't. Like, you need to cultivate excitement whenever you show up somewhere.
Yeah.
And you figure out how to do that through like your live shows. But I think comedy still has that electricity about it, with comics working out all the time, collaborating all the time. I think that that to me also draws me to it, because it feels like how music used to feel in the local scene, you know. So, but like anything, you know, the higher up you go, it's like the less of that you get. But I think you have so many clubs in big cities like here in LA and New York, and, you know, it's to me, that to me is like, it's part of what keeps me interested in it. So,
yeah. I know that you have a very lofty title. A lot of weight is put on your words, but are there any people that you're looking at in the comedy scenes that you're like, people need to watch for this person?
I mean, yeah, there are a lot of great acts out there. You know, in comedy in LA, I think that, I mean, there's a lot of like great, like undiscovered talent in like some of like the belly room shows at the store. So like I would more so like point people, because like everyone's taste in comedy is different.
Right.
So I just like point people to like, hey, if you want to go check out something, like go to, you know, Crack 'em Up at the Belly Room on Thursday nights at 9 o'clock. Go to, you know, go to something like show at the Bourbon Room. You know, like on a Tuesday or whatever. Like, and you'll find something that you really enjoy. You know, I think that that's the thing, where it's just like, put yourself out there. I think it's more like that type of thing, and then like the audience sort of decides like what's good, you know. That's how I always, because I'm like, I do champion people, and you can like read my work to see what that is like, what that does. But I think that I'm always looking for like the story too. Like, funny is great, funny is awesome. What's the story behind you as a person, or as like the thing that you're creating or cultivating? Like, that's where I get the most buzz too. So
I saw your piece on Ralph Barbosa.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a great one too. Yeah, he was a good interview. Right when he had gotten that, like, you know, flash of interest, maybe not in the best fashion, but you know,
I mean, his star was rising before that point.
It was
that just kind of.
Right, yeah.
Pushed him over in yeah. a special.
Yeah.
I've seen him live a few times. Actually, the first time we saw him live was right as things were starting to open up here in Austin.
Yeah.
In late, must have been, no, it was early 21.
Yeah.
And I saw him, and he's Dallas-based, but he was booked on this show. And I was like, oh my God, this guy.
Right.
Seeing the special, it's like, loses a little bit of that magic, as any televised thing will.
Sure.
But, you know, got to see him live right before the special came out, or right after the special came out. I'm like, oh, this is the last time I'm going to see him in a venue like Cap City.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be doing theaters and theaters and theaters now.
Sure enough.
So good. And yeah. such a nice guy.
Yeah, yeah, he is. Yeah. Yeah. He sort of reminds me of a lot of people who I grew up with in, like, you know, Orange County or whatever, yeah. where it was just like, you know, the class clown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he kind of has that vibe
yeah,
about
yeah.
it, you know?
Totally.
So,
totally.
yeah. But yeah, no, I'm so glad to see, like, different forms of comedy and different faces, different mm-hmm. backgrounds
yeah.
get some shine. And mm-hmm. that's, to me, like, also the beautiful part about comedy is like anyone, it's like not anyone can do it, but anyone can do it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
like if you really want to do it, you can do it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you really have that gift,
mm-hmm.
then there's ways for you to share it.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything we haven't talked about before we wind down?
Well, I mean, again, going back to my whole trying to get some barbecue here. is there anything? I mean, I don't know. Is there any secrets or tips you can recommend to me that I should try to adhere to for the next couple of days? Like places or times to go? Because I'm just
times to go. I don't know. So if you're talking about the elusive Franklin's and trying to get into their doors. I don't know if you've had them.
Yeah, I've already. Had, yeah.
I've okay, had all right, so I can skip them. There is a barbecue place. There are two barbecue places in town that I am a huge fan of.
Okay.
One is Style Switch.
Okay.
The original location is on North Lamar.
Okay.
They have another couple of other locations. I can't remember where. Really, really good stuff. There's a food truck at Barton Springs,
okay,
near the Zilker Park, and out where I live, which is far west Austin, this food truck was there, and they have their second food truck at another far west location.
Yeah.
Hands down, the best barbecue I've ever had in the Austin area.
Wow!
And because we're far west and it's not as populated, they ended up pulling the truck that was closest to my house.
Yeah,
moving it to Barton Springs. And I'm like, that is the smartest business move they could have made,
mm-hmm.
because Barton Springs, there's tons of traffic, foot traffic.
Yeah.
And when I finally went there, I'm like, okay, it's just nonstop business.
Yeah.
I don't know if everybody agrees with me that it's the best, because everybody does think Franklin's is the best. I'm not a huge fan of Franklin's.
It's fine. It's good. But, like, it's just kind of expensive, too.
It's like, well, food... Barbecue in general is very expensive.
Yeah.
Beef is out of the, you know, sky high cost.
And yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a cheap dining option.
Sure.
You know, may as well go to, you know, Trulux.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But that's I was kind of, yeah.
Jim's Smokehouse, by the way, is the name. Jim's Smokehouse is the name
and
of the food truck.
And it's in what areas?
So off Barton Spring Road, there's a food truck before before the actual park area.
Cool.
It's lots of little food trucks, and it's got a bunch of picnic tables and hangout areas. So.
All right. I think I know what I'm doing then. I think I know what I'm doing. Appreciate the insight.
Yeah.
I have to ask.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because every time I come here, it's like, you know, because you only have so much time, you know,
right.
where I'm like, okay, I've been to some of these ones before.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to have to go. I'm not going to go again,
yeah.
even though I like it.
Yeah.
What's like something new I can go do?
Yeah.
Or something I haven't done before.
Yeah.
Not necessarily new, but.
Yeah.
But thank you for that tip.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
I'm going to have to ask you afterwards if you do end up going, what you think of it, because I've had a lot of barbecue, and that is, to me, the brisket, oh my God, the way their crust.
Yeah.
It's just. Like a little burn.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bark is everything.
Yes, yes. All right. Let me ask you my closing question.
Sure.
One word to describe your future.
Whew. What did I say? Past was blurry.
Yeah.
So I think the future is clear.
Look at that. That's so poetic. All right, well, that is a wrap on Comedy Wham Presents. Nate Jackson. Nate, tell us where we can find you on social media and your projects. And
yeah,
articles.
On Instagram, Natrodamus, NATERODAMUS. Twitter, X, whatever they call it now, is Nate Jackson, or N Jackson Journo. And I don't go on there that often, but that's where I'm at. And then, look for me on LA Times.
Yep, support the industry.
Yeah.
It needs it. All right, well, we hope you've enjoyed learning about how Nate got to be the comedic genius, is my standard line. Comedic observing genius, comedic covering genius that you heard today just as much as I have. This has been Comedy Wham Presents Nate Jackson. I'm Valerie, and that's been funny. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you.